The views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
That is the lovely music from my friend and musical producer, Sekele Seshibe, up in D.C. I just love the music. Oh, my gosh. I can't wait to get in the studio with him. What's going on, everybody? It is December the 20th, 2015, the week of Christmas.
La, 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 la.
La, 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 la.
La, 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 la.
Did you get your Christmas shopping in, Mother Zola?
You know, I don't Christmas shop. I don't Christmas shop. For my mom, I get her something because, you know, I can't go through that with her. It's tradition. But for everyone else, It's I love you all year long. And if I want to give you something, I will give you something. Now, I have this thing where, you know, sometimes I may say to you, would you like an end of the year gift? You know.
End of the year gift.
But
right.
I don't, and it does not fall on the 25th, trust me.
Right. Don't expect me to be trying to track you down and bring you a present.
Rush and find you and give you your gift that I spent hours shopping for. No, thank you.
I remember when I was indulging in all of that. Oh, my goodness. It was such a headache. You would just spend so much money. But one thing I've never been into, though, is the Black Friday shopping. That I have not been into.
Oh, no.
I was shocked.
Oh, no.
I do apologize for the rambling. Trying to get my head set together here. But, yes, even though years ago I did participate in the shopping and all of that, but that Black Friday, I just don't like crowds because I have that phobia. My grandmother kept us in the malls and the stores all day and all night. I mean, we would spend one of her off days taking her shopping to purchase things, and then her next off day taking those things that she decided she didn't want to keep back.
Yes.
If she couldn't decide, then she'd say, well,
she'd buy both
and bring one of them back. Like, wait a minute now. Hold on. You mean to tell me?
And a lot of times there'll be big boxes, TVs.
Yeah. Just all kinds of stuff. Vacuum cleaners, you just, oh, yeah, oh, cool, yeah, we're just going to, me and your granddaughter, you, granny, yeah, we're going to lift this box in my car, my little car.
Yes. It'll fit in there. It'll fit. Push.
Oh, yeah, it'll fit. Oh, my goodness. So I just can't deal with the whole shopping thing. Internet shopping is the best thing that could have ever happened.
Yes.
I love
picking those keys.
Go to the checkout and be done with it.
Mm-hmm.
And just wait for.
I'll hold your shopping cart for a week while you think about it. I like that. You know.
Right.
Let me just put this in my shopping cart.
Yes. So now that's cool. I can deal with that. You know what? I played this clip and I wanted to play it just quickly. First, let me say. Welcome in, everyone. And let me give people the number to call in. 641-715-3660. And the participant code is 549032. And then press pound behind that. And if you would like to share a comment, press *61 and we will get you in. Now, I know people love to listen to the Lovers Place Radio, and we certainly thank you. Also, I would like to add that there are a number of stations that you can tune into, a number of radio hosts that you can tune into. If you just go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, because I pulled this clip off of It's Time for Awakening radio station, which is a really good station. I'm sure people have heard of it. I think it's a great clip that we probably should meditate to. So let me just play this. It's only 2 minutes. But before I play that, I would like for people to start thinking about our topics for tonight, because we have a couple of very serious topics to talk about tonight. On Sunday nights here at the Lotus Place, if you are a new listener to the Lotus Place Radio, hailing from all over the nation and sometimes all over the country, you never know who may call in and say something to share something here with us at the Lotus Place. But I'm here in Houston, Texas. Woo-hoo, Houston. So, yes, H-Town. And anyway, we'll have Delta coming on later because she has her Ask Delta letter. Delta's hailing from Gulfport, Mississippi. Mississippi.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So tonight
I have to say that every time I hear Mississippi, I have to say it like they say on life. Mississippi.
Yeah. I thought they said New York City.
Well,
New York City.
You're right, but no, they don't. I think I just said that.
It sounds cute anyway. Mississippi. So tonight we are discussing the sexualization and victimization of Black females, Black women, and also the lead in the water in Flint, Michigan. Now, excuse me. Ooh, I didn't mean to press mute. Now, let me just say this. Flint, Michigan, Detroit, all around that little area. Just about 2 years ago, these people were having their water cut off because
right.
of the change with the city manager, which can come in, and once your city is under the control of a city manager, they can come in and bust up the unions, they can bust up the schools, make all the schools charter schools, change a lot of the city contracts, eradicate the city contracts. They just come in and just do a complete overhaul, and it's all
overhaul.
About... Yes, it's all about the financial aspects, the fiscal matters of the city. It's nothing about social services. Oh, we know that we just pull the cover, not the cover, we pull the rug away from under everybody in Flint. So instead of them considering, let's bring in social services to these people because they were once employees of high-paying jobs. And now they have nothing. So instead of thinking about, let's bring in some social services, let's bring in some aid, new training, let's bring in some more manufacturing jobs or whatever the case, let's offer these people free college tuition to wherever they like to go to, since we just pulled them away from the career that they had for the last 25 years. Then you stole all of their pensions. Okay, let's not forget that. They stole the pensions. Remember, this was before all the water and all of that. Excuse me for a second. Okay, this was before all of that. They stole the people's pensions. And I mean, just craziness. Just absolute craziness. Just like here in Houston, when the people that were invested in Enron, they lost millions of dollars. But anyway, back to Flint and Detroit and up in Michigan, period. Because I think it's detestable. It's abhorrent. It's just... It's incredulous that first you jump
inhumane.
It's inhumane because you jack up their water bills, increase the water bills like over 200% or something.
Right.
And then you come and turn their water off because they can't afford to pay the darn water bill. I mean, that's
right.
Insane. And you as a city, you know you have a city budget. So those people have budgeted, they've written in their budget what they pay for water. And when you come back and increase that to probably, what, about a third of what their darn rent is, that's insane.
Yes.
And then I think it's, go ahead, Aja. I need to pull up this percentage. I forgot, like, the impoverished population of Flint and Detroit. It's like, it's astronomical. So how are they going to pay an extra fee on water bills?
Yes. One lady was saying that hers was $900. And when she wanted to know why was it so much, they said that the lady that was, whoever the tenant was before her, they left that bill, but she was responsible for it. Plus, if your home goes like 3 months without water, you know, you can't pay your bill, then they can legally come in and take your children away from you and put them as wards of the state. Yet they are the cause of you not being able to pay your water bill. It's crazy. It's designed to just defeat the whole process of living comfortably. It's no way.
Mhm. It's a Ponzi scheme.
Yes.
Major Ponzi schemes on us daily.
It's a system. It's not just random. This is not random.
No. So let me see. Let me play this quick clip because. I think this sets the tone for us. And I also want to know, like, who advocates for black women being raped by on-duty cops? Like, Hoquaw. If there were a group of sisters, and we would hear from them tonight. Let me just play this one right here. I clipped this one from Time for Awakening's radio page, webpage. Do check that out. Check out that Time for Awakening radio page.
Time for Awakening.
Subscribe
okay.
to it. Yes. Subscribe
America
to it.
Negro collective is richer than most nations of the world. We have an annual income of more than $30 billion a year, which is more than all of the exports of the United States and more than the national budget of Canada. Did you know that? That's power right there if we know how to prove.
We should own and operate and control the economy of our community. We have to become involved in a program of re-education to educate our people into the importance of knowing that when you spend your dollar out of the community in which you live, the community in which you spend your money becomes richer and richer. The community out of which you take your money becomes poorer and poorer. And because these Negroes who have been misled, misguided, are breaking their necks to take their money and spend it with the man. The man is becoming richer and richer, and you're becoming poorer and poorer. And then what happens? The community in which you live becomes a slum. It becomes a ghetto. The conditions become run down. And then you have the audacity to complain about poor housing in a run-down community. Why, you run it down yourself when you take your dollar.
We've got to strengthen black institutions. I call upon you to take your money out of the banks downtown and deposit your money in Tri-State Bank. We are telling you to follow what we are doing. Put your money there. You have six or seven black insurance companies here. Take out your insurance there. Now, these are some practical things that we can do. We begin the process of building a great economic base. We've got to give ourselves to this struggle until the end. We got to see it through.
So our people not only have to be re-educated to the importance of supporting black business, but the black man himself has to be made aware of the importance of going into business. And once you and I go into business, we own and operate at least the businesses in our community, what we will be doing is developing a situation wherein we will actually be able to create employment for the people in the community.
The black man must unite in one grand racial hierarchy, making a racial empire upon which the sun shall never set. We get fighting this black and all of the black.
All right, that was Dr. King, Malcolm, and the Honorable Marcus Garvey speaking about black economics. I love it. I love when he says, "Well, you run it down yourself."
Right.
Shopping in our communities and spending money in our own communities and building in our communities. So, Aja Mazzola, let's see here. Let me give out the number and then would you like to reach a point for us? Shall we have poetry?
Yes. Okay. Yes,
time for poetry. 641-715-3660 is the number to call. 549-032, press pound for those of you listening online. And if you would like to speak, just press *61 and we will definitely key you in tonight as we discuss the sexualization and victimization of black females. This is in response to ex-Oklahoma cop Daniel Host Clark being convicted on 18 accounts of raping over 13 women. So he's facing, I think it's up to life in prison. But we'll have a clip that I found very interesting. These sisters got together and started their own organization because they said they went out. They're in Oklahoma. They said they went out, they went to the church, they approached the church, they approached different women's groups and other black leaders in the community to seek help in terms of providing some type of support for the rape victims of Host Clark. And
Right. Basically
the response that they received was like, oh yeah, well, we have it. Okay, so thanks for notifying us of this case, and we'll take it from here.
Right.
You just sit back.
These things will take time.
Yeah, these things will take time. All of this, you know, they didn't want to respond. And so I'm so proud of these sisters. They do receive the Black Star Award because they started their own organization based on a need, and that's entrepreneurship. You see a problem, you work to solve that problem. You feel that void. So, exactly. And we're talking about the lead in the water in Flint, Michigan. I can't believe that after they, the state of Michigan increased the water on these people, impoverished people already, took away the industry. And then you turn around and give them lead water. And then turn around and send FEMA in. FEMA of all organizations to go in and bring bottle. I wouldn't trust a damn thing FEMA brought in. Hell, you might do better drinking the damn lead water than trusting FEMA.
They may send you away quicker.
Hell yeah, FEMA sent in those trailers to the victims of Katrina as housing. They sent those trailers laced with formaldehyde. They were living in the trailers, and the materials were laden with formaldehyde. So, Aja, come on, bring us your poetry.
Okay, all right.
Let me welcome in Delta Cougar. She's on the line with us. Hey, Delta.
Namaste, Delta Cougar.
Hey.
How are you?
Fine. How are everybody doing?
Doing splendid. Oh.
Good. Glad that you're joining
us.
Come on, Mother Zola, read your poetry for us.
All right, so this is a poem that I've known about for about 10 years or so, maybe a little less. I've just recently found out the author's name, so I want to give credit at the end of this poem. This poem is called, "Why Did You Make Me Black, Lord?" Lord, why did you make me black? Why did you make someone the world would hold back? Black is the color of dirty clothes, of grimy hands and feet. Black is the color of darkness, of tired, beaten streets. Why did you give me thick lips, a broad nose, and kinky hair? Why did you create someone who receives the hated stare? Black is the color of the bruised eye when someone gets hurt. Black is the color of darkness. Black is the color of dirt. Why is my bone structure so thick? My hips and cheeks so high? Why are my eyes brown and not the color of the sky? Why do people think I'm useless? How come I feel so used? Why do people see my skin and think that I should be abused? Lord, I just don't understand. What is it about my skin? Why is it some people want to hate me and not know the person within? Black is what people are labeled when others want to keep them away. Black is the color of shadows cast. Black is the end of the day. Lord, you know my own people mistreat me. And you know this just ain't right. They don't like my hair. They don't like my skin. As they say, I'm too dark or I'm too light. Lord, don't you think it's time to make a change? Why don't you redo creation and make everyone the same? And this is God's reply. Why did I make you black? Why did I make you black? I made you in the color of coal from which beautiful diamonds are formed. I made you in the color of oil, the black gold which keeps people warm. Your color is the same as the rich dark soil that grows the food you need. Your color is the same as the black stallion and panther. Oh, what majestic creatures indeed. All colors of the heavenly rainbow can be found throughout every nation. When all these colors are blended, you become my greatest creation. Your hair is the texture of lamb's wool. Such a beautiful creature is he. I am the shepherd who watches them, and I will always watch over thee. You are the color of the midnight sky. I put star glitter in your eyes. There's a beautiful smile hidden behind your pain. That's why your cheeks are so high. You are the color of the dark clouds from the hurricanes I create in September. I made your lips so full and thick, so when you kiss, they will remember. Your stature is strong, your bone structure thick, to withstand this burden of time. The reflection you see in the mirror, that image is mine. So get off your knees, look in the mirror and tell me what you see. I didn't make you in the image of darkness. I made you in the image of me. And this was written by Runette Nia Igbo. Why did you make me black? I'm done. Black Rose, are you there?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm here. I had to come off of mute. You know, when Jamie Brown said, say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud, I think that more people began to just really appreciate their blackness.
Oh, they did.
People began to view their beautiful, their hair as a beautiful halo, their fro as a halo. And
right.
Just took a whole new sense of black pride and being happy about yourself, being satisfied and not just satisfied, what I want to say, really appreciating.
Proud?
Proud of appreciating your skin color. Because as a black person that has been around white people, and we were talking about this the other day, Aja, I tell you, they will tell you, that color just wouldn't look good on my pale skin. It's just so white. You know, it needs some color. And I said, sure does. You know, and so they know. They know.
Yes.
They look around.
When I was I was working with Estee Lauder as a makeup artist and skincare specialist, I would have to do their faces, right? I do weddings and stuff like that. And as I'm doing their lips, drawing in the, you know, as much as I can, you know, try to make them as full as possible, after they've paid $25 for this fake stuff that's supposed to make your lips puffy, they would just stare at me. And they would actually say, I guess they feel comfortable because we're one-on-one. I'm all up in their face.
Mm.
You have the prettiest skin. And I sure wish I had more lips like you. Your lips are so pretty. I'd say, okay, just be still. Be still. Let me draw this line, you know. And they would just, I mean, they were fascinated with our color and the way we look. And they would spend so much money. I mean, so much money. It was horrendous. One lady paid $120 for one jar, and her face looked like leather. And she'd been using this for a while. And I wanted to say, it's not worthy. It's not worthy.
That and nothing else will work. Just deal with it. Just deal with it. So, Delta, when we come back from break, then we will jump into your hot topics, because I know you have some. I want to play this little clip right here. And this is a clip about some women speaking about what is justice in the case of Daniel Holt Claw. The Claw. I'm just going to call him the Claw, because
I don't want to say his full name. Yeah.
Right. I'm not giving that man any energy. So
no.
These are some comments of some of the organizers of the women's group that originated out of this whole case, and some other speakers.
Justice in this situation would be a life sentence, life without possibility of parole. Anything less than that would not be justice in this.
Justice looks like everything more than life. Like, we want life and more. If one man can be sentenced to a life sentence for only attacking one woman, then we expect 6 life sentences from this case.
Well, justice at minimum looks like holding Daniel Holtzclaw accountable. That's minimal. But beyond that, we have to realize that there's 13 black women whose lives have been shaped and changed by this. So once this is over, the consequences of being abused and being abused by people in authority will continue unless we find ways to hold these women up, to provide them the support they need, whether it's services, whether it's safe living, whether it's treatment. The things that made them vulnerable should be the place that we start to make them whole.
All right. Even though we began to hear an echo towards the end, that's okay. We heard the message. And that's what I want to discuss tonight. Speaking about the aftercare for these women, I just can only imagine. It's already, you're being raped, and then you're being raped by an officer on duty. That's horrible. So let's take a quick break, and then we'll come right back and jump into Delta Cruz's Hot Topic.
Okay. Are y'all ready?
Yes, indeed.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Six four one seven one five three six six zero is the number to dial. 549-032, press pound. And we'll get you right on in if you just press star 61, and we will open up your mic so that you can offer comment. Let's also welcome in Icy Hot. Icy Hot's on the line with us as well. Icy Hot, welcome in. She went and got that Jesus today, boy. Woo!
Hello, hello, definitely. You got to have the spirit filled.
Mm-hmm. Get that Jesus. Mm-hmm. All right, then. I know somebody didn't go and get their Jesus today.
Mm-mm-mm. No, I didn't get out today. I stayed in today.
Oh, ooh, what you going to do?
Mm-hmm. I'll get out next Sunday.
Oh, okay.
You know that Wednesday night Bible study.
And I was just
Friday
about
night
to say.
Prayer. What you waiting all the way to next Sunday for? What's up?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, you took the words right out of my head. I was just sitting here thinking, now Delta can go on Wednesday and catch up. Get you some good Bible study. Nice. Take those your biddies, your grand biddies.
Yeah.
All right, Delta, mm-hmm. What you have for us? I know you have some wild and crazy. And
yes, I've got some hot topics tonight.
Okay.
Well, our first one that we have tonight, we have now everybody loves, and I hear you say it, Black Rose, mm-hmm. that you love to look at empire.
Mm-hmm.
So, this man
mm-hmm.
had a 15-year-old son, and the man's son had been watching Empire, and the man called, his 15-year-old son, I don't know if the young man like sucking a penis. And
what?
The daddy, yeah, wait, listen, now, let me get it right. Because this is a hot story. And
okay.
The man called his 15-year-old son. The son said that he was gay and he wanted to suck penis like they do on Empire. The daddy went and got a gun and told his son, said, I'm going to show you. You will not grow up the sucker penis. The daddy went and killed his 15-year-old son. Went to He went to the room and retrieved the gun, came back, and shot his 15-year-old son and killed him. Told him that he would not let him grow up and, you know, and suck penis. So now the young man that plays the you can Google it, Black Rose, while you're talking to me. The young man that plays the gay guy on Empire heard about the story. And I think he said he would not play that role anymore, if I'm not mistaken. I think he said he was not going to play that role anymore.
He's not really responsible.
But the man said that there was a time that you didn't put gay people on TV, like two men making out
Empire,
in heaven.
But Empire is not the first show that has shown it.
It's definitely not the first show. It's been going on for a long time in other shows.
Yeah, but Empire have really pushed the limit, though.
No, it's no more than any others.
Yeah,
I beg to differ on that.
Yeah, I
beg to differ
that
in that.
I would say that some of the other shows are just as holistic, or if not more, because I couldn't believe some of the things I was seeing on some of these TV stations. That's why I was like, TV is just it's become X-rated.
I think it's partial. We're being partial to our own, as we tend to do.
Anyway, let me finish getting it out. Well, anyway, the young man that plays the part, he said that he would not play that character anymore, play that part anymore. And he was very heartbroken because it was a scene from the movie, what he had done. And the young man went in, and I guess he was imitating that scene. And the father discovered him and killed him. He shot him and killed him. And I think a lot of these TV shows with this gay stuff have gone too far. And they really have. They really, really have. And I think it's wrong for them to put two men in the bed. Like it comes on 8 o'clock. That's still a good time slot. And you got a lot of kids are watching that.
What is the name of this show? It's like Bob and Ted or something like that, where these two guys, they're married, these two white guys. It comes on like about 7 or so, and they even have a song.
But Empire really pushed the limit now, y'all. We got to be for real.
How?
I'll tell you what's pushing the limits. What's pushing the limits is when they show people shooting each other with these extreme weapons. And when they show people taking these guns and blowing off somebody's head, and then somebody stand over them and eat the head and all that. Now, I think that was pushing the limits. I think that's gross. So I think they push the limits in a lot of different ways. There are a lot of different things that I don't like about what I see on television. That's why I'm always promoting the fact that what we see on television that we don't like, then it's up to us to try to work towards producing or helping to produce some content that we would like to see. So
right.
That way we can combat that. So I'm not saying like the Empire shouldn't show that, because I don't think that they should have anything like that on television before 10 or 11 o'clock. I really do think that all of that should be reserved for, and when I say all of that, I'm speaking about same-sex relationships on TV, because some parents, I'm not a parent, but I'm just thinking, and from what I've heard other parents say, some parents may not be ready to explain that to their children at that time. And if a child is sitting down after dinner at 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock at night, or 9 o'clock, because some of these children stay up late, and if you're flipping through the channels and you see two men or two women, then a parent has to explain that. But then from what I understand, too, they're explaining all of this in some of these classrooms, forcing this issue on the children about non-gender and homosexuality.
Yeah, they had to fire one teacher who was teaching non-gender.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a male teacher.
I wonder what Mother Hattie had to say. Mother Hattie, what do you think in terms of is Empire pushing the issue, or has the issue been out there in previous shows, or what are your thoughts?
Well, I don't know. I think it's part of all what's going on. I've only seen it once or twice. So I don't know all the intricate parts of that, because I don't watch a lot of that kind of TV.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And see, me, I don't watch it. Me
exactly. And then see, that's what I'm saying. So Mother Donna, how can you say, you know, just this question?
But it influences. Young people are very, very influenced.
But then that would apply to a lot of other shows, is what we're trying to say. Not trying to defend Empire, because they don't pay me anything for advertising. But I'm just saying, I hear, if we are going to be critical of something, then we must research it. We must look at it, read it, watch it, so that we can actually come from an informed basis and have an informed opinion. Like Mother Hattie said, she don't watch it. She really can't say. So what I find is a lot of people, they criticize Empire. Yeah, let me tell you, and I agree, Mother Dunn, I don't like the homosexuality in it. But to contrast that in something that maintains my viewership is the fact that Empire has been the one show that I've read, not that I watch a lot of it, but Empire has spoken out on police brutality, how they treat black people like animals and try to lock us up. Empire constantly, each and every show focuses on family and holding the
family. Family, always family.
Always family, always family. And so,
no matter what's going on.
Right, and so it's a gay man that created the show, him and his partner. So of course they're going to have some of that in there. So that's why we need to focus on trying to put out something for the audience that we would like to attract. Because they're going to keep doing what they're doing. We know they're trying to push a gay agenda. I don't like it. I'll be the first to tell you, no, I don't like it, because, like I said, I just don't think it's appropriate for the daytime. But anyway, that was just my thoughts on it.
And let us not forget that our illustrious president has really, 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 really been behind the gay agenda.
Absolutely. Gay is hot.
Really.
Gay is hot right now.
Yeah, he's been.
It's hot as a firecracker. He's pushed some mighty big bills. Pushed some mighty big bills.
Yes, he did. But I think, you know.
But what?
He did. But Empire is just a number one hit show, and I think it's really pushing the limit.
Okay.
That's me
so
personally.
Let me
go on to my. We can come back to that. Let's go on to this one. Okay, there was a man a Saturday night that was him and his neighbor got into it in California, and he was taken to the hospital into the emergency room, and he was handcuffed. So then the police unhandcuffed him. After they brought him to the hospital, they said he had calmed down some. And the police, and he took the handcuffs off. So when he took the handcuffs off, this is what they said. Now, you know, they said they took the handcuffs off. And they said the guy started throwing stuff at him. And here the code word is that he was reaching for the officer gun.
Right.
And they shot him and killed him in the emergency room. The police did in California. Shot and killed the man. So, you know, that was a very, very, you know, tragic situation. But why would you kill him, you know, I mean, just for like chunking stuff? What was he chunking? They didn't say. They said he was just throwing stuff.
For him to have to be arrested and detained and then shot.
Yeah, him and his neighbor had a dispute. And and the police brought him to the hospital because I guess they thought maybe he was having a crazy moment or whatever.
And they
took him to the emergency room. And now the man winds up being shot to death in the emergency room. Shot to death. So that was pretty, you know, that's a horrible situation. Okay, then we have another story where a young girl, she is 10 years old, and her father is a policeman, and he was friends with another policeman. And this one comes out of New York, and she was 10 years old, and the policeman started to rape her at the age of 10. and he raped her for 3 whole years. So the young lady got courage to tell somebody that the policeman had been raping her. So he was a policeman, got his badge on, and molested his child, his friend's
child. How many years?
For 3 years. He raped her for 3 years.
He raped his friend's child.
His friend's child, but he's a policeman.
Okay.
He is a policeman.
And I think I read Go ahead, Aja.
When did the parents find out about it?
When the young lady told them, when she turned 13, she told her mother and father that he had been raping her. So they had him arrested and put away. And he was fired. And I guess, you know, he was fired from his job. So I guess they're going to have to determine, you know, I guess what, you know how they go through that motion, what they got to do with him.
So maybe they'll charge him now.
Uh-huh. So he had been raping her for the longest.
And I believe I read this article that stated like over 1,000 police officers, I want to say within the past year or two, have had their badges removed because of allegations of sexual assault on so many of victims. People that they've pulled over, just like Daniel Holzkopf. And I think this is a good segue into this, because we need to go on and get into our top. Cop used whiteness as his weapon to rape black women. Former Oklahoma City cop thought his bad. And I want to say thank you, Dale, for those hot topics. And thank you for keeping this topic alive on the Lotus Place, because Dale, you really press that we keep this topic alive, keep this case alive. With this white cop using his whiteness to sexually harass and violate women. So, that's the cop. He was convicted by an all-white, mostly male jury. One of the victims said that he stated to her, is this the first time you sucked a white cock? That's what he said to her. You're going to give me head or go to jail, or your ass is going to jail. So he was found guilty Thursday on 18 of the 36 counts, including first-degree sexual assault. He now faces up to 263 years in prison. Because he has
the nerve to cry.
And damn, the crying, they said he put on an Emmy performance, baby, in that courtroom. I watched a little video. He just putting his head all down and tearing all
his face all screwed up.
Because he knows, baby, he's going to get raped so bad in jail. Oh, my God. Woo-hoo. It's just horrible. Mm. And so, let me see. 13 of the victims were black, including a 17-year-old girl. So, let me see here. She was a runaway. And so the thing about, the victims were the age range from 17 to about 50-something. The grandmother was 57 years old.
57.
Mm-hmm. She was 57 years of age. And she's the one that actually reported the case, reported what happened to her to the police department, and then they began to backtrack and see what's going on. Let's take a caller here. Then we'll get back into the hot topic. Caller from 650.
Hey.
Hey.
How's it going?
It's going good.
Y'all talk about one of the main things that don't come on my TV is Empire. New.
Okay.
And this cop.
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
Go ahead. And the cop.
Yeah, he needs to do all the time. Every bit of it.
Every bit of it. Every bit of it. Life.
And he probably go into protective custody. You know, they watch out for their own, even in jail.
This is true.
They gonna protect you.
But you know what? I don't care how much they're gonna be. They're gonna protect him. They're gonna find a way to get to him. I do believe it's something. They may not do it right away, but they're gonna find a way to get to that cop and give him what he needs.
I hope so.
I believe that. I do.
They don't stand up for nothing in jail no more. I'm a prime witness of it. The lifers trying to get to the lower yards, and, you know, and nobody's standing up for nothing no more. Once they start letting them take stuff, you know, they just
take stuff like what? What do you mean?
They took the tobacco. One thing they took.
Okay.
They took you can't have this type of radio. You can't wear this type of stuff. Stuff that George Jackson them stood up for. Stuff that George Jackson them wouldn't even tolerate. You know what I mean? But in there, it's so different now. Like it used to be a time where the prisoners ran the prison. Now the guards run the prison again. The COs run it. They tell them, and it's a mess.
They're having sex with the prisoners. They're the ones that's bringing in the contraband and beating and killing the prisoners. It's horrible.
Yeah.
It's horrible. Let me ask you this. So you feel that the claw should serve time? What do you think will serve a life sentence? What type of services do you think would be helpful for some of the victims?
Well, they victim of crime, so they should get compensated. Like
well,
in California,
the monetary compensation, but like what type of like mental or social services do you think that they may need? Like therapy.
Yeah, they're going to need it.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to need it. A lot of therapy.
Mm-hmm.
But are they going to be able to afford it?
Well,
you know?
That's the thing. It should be offered to them. I was
exactly
offered to them because they were victims of a person that was employed by the city. So therefore, that should be a part of their civil lawsuit for the city to have to pay for their any type of aftercare. Because these were one of the ladies, the 57-year-old grandmother, said she had a stroke behind it, so she has medical bills that she needs to be compensated for.
Mm.
Right.
Let me give you some figures on the effects of rape. The victims of sexual assault are 3 times more likely to suffer from depression, 6 times more likely to suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder. You know, that includes a lot of disorders. 13 more times more likely to abuse alcohol, become alcoholics. 26 times more likely to abuse drugs. 4 times more likely to contemplate suicide. So even though the guy will serve some time, even though they're going to give them some monetary compensation, look at the effects, the after effects, the long-term effects that these people are going to have to go through. Yes, the city should definitely give them all the counseling they need, and not just for like 6 weeks, like they try to whip off on somebody. 6 weeks, you'll be fine. Bye bye.
Certainly. Well, thank you, caller. Let me ask you one more question. Well, no, I'm not going to ask you another question because we need to get ready to play a clip and take a break. Yeah, and I hear your baby. Seems like your baby needs you.
No, they all right. That's just like these kids growing up with these two daddies and two mommies. They're going to need a lot of help, too.
Yes, they have shows like that on TV. With two daddies or two mommies. They have shows like that.
So when little Johnny goes to school and they're teasing him when he get dropped off and he comes shoots the school up, they shouldn't have never been allowed to adopt, you know? That's how deep it can get. That's how deep it can get.
Gay people can get children very easily now in today's society. Snap of your finger, no red tape whatsoever.
Because everybody's so accepting everything.
Anything
the pedophiles, the pedophiles trying to get rights now. Pedophilia.
Yes, well,
they
certainly are.
They have a plan and an agenda that they've been working
they
on
said,
since I think 1971.
They said the homosexual got their rights. We need to get ours. The sick.
Well, the homosexuals they took our playbook, the civil rights playbook, and used it to organize and to have laws in the system. So we just need to really just go back and revisit those blueprints and plans and just reenact all of that. And it's not that difficult. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. Sure, circumstances are quite different now, but still, I think that some of those plans and blueprints we can implement. We're going to go ahead on and play this video quickly and go into the break. And thank you for listening. I'm going to just mute you right here right quick. And let me see. Is this Brother Brown?
Yeah, how you doing?
Hey, Brother Brown, what's going on?
I was just listening to the comments, and you know, that guy that got that conviction, what they're gonna do? He's gonna end up joining the Aryan Brotherhood, and that's the protection arm of the penitentiary and the penal system, and they don't cross. They don't cross lines. See, because unfortunately, they still run the prison. They are the white Aryan nation and all the penitentiaries. They protect people like this. And the African American, like the BGF and the Crips and the Bloods, see, they don't cross lines. They don't cross those boundaries. Because they were called a rat in the penitentiary, and they have mutual respect for one another. So he's probably going to join that white gang. They're going to protect him. They're going to put him in isolation. And that's the way they protect white people in prison.
Always.
But they didn't protect Jeffrey Dahmer.
Well, they didn't care about Jeffrey Dahmer. Jeffrey Dahmer wasn't part of the white Aryan nation. He was just out there. That's why it was easy to get to Jeffrey Dahmer. But a lot of guys that's been in there, especially white cops, they're already part of the white Aryan nation. See what I'm saying? They already belonged to the white Aryan nation before they got convicted. So they're already members. It's just that they got caught. They got caught with criminal activity on the outside, but when they go on the inside, they're very well protected.
Very well protected. Speaking of prisons, I want to share this before we go to break, Brother Brown. Mumia Abu-Jamal was set to testify in court last week on him receiving inadequate medical care since he's been in prison. He's been ill with symptoms of hepatitis C virus, for more than 8 months now. The prison officials have refused to dispense an antiviral drug that could cure him, claiming his symptoms are not severe enough. So he was supposed to appear via video stream from prison. I think that was like Thursday or Friday.
Right.
And I have not been able to find out anything regarding his testimony. But his supporters say he nearly died from untreated diabetes in March, and has been suffering from serious skin rashes and swelling linked to his untreated hepatitis C virus. And see, that's something that I heard about, that a lot of people that are imprisoned or working in these prisons, they suffer from that hepatitis C. And it's horrible if you're, first of all, a political prisoner, wrongly convicted of something, and then you have to go through all of this type of suffering. It's just
exactly
sick. Let's take a quick break, and then we're going to come back. I want to jump into this video from the ladies who started the organization in Oklahoma.
searching for the best in online black radio, then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
Okay, and we are back at the Lotus Place, and the number to dial is 641-715-3660. Participant code is 549032. Press pound and press star 61 if you would like to share a comment. We are discussing the sexualization and victimization of black females in regards to the cop, ex-cop in Oklahoma, that was found guilty on 18 accounts of raping 13, eight of the 13 women that came forward to testify. And also we're talking about the lead in the water in Flint, Michigan.
This morning, the city of Flint, Michigan is in a state of emergency. High levels of lead were found in its tap water. This week, FEMA sent more than 7,000 gallons of bottled water for the city's residents. Adriana Diaz is along the Flint River with how this crisis unfolded and the health impact. Adriana, good morning.
Good morning. When officials tapped into the Flint River here for the city's drinking water, the strong chemicals needed to clean the water ended up corroding the pipes, contaminating the water with lead. By the time the city switched back to its original water source, families here said the damage was already done.
When I hear my son get up at night and cry because his bones hurt and there's nothing I can give him, there's nothing I can do for him to take away his pain, I feel completely helpless.
For nearly 5 months, Melissa Mays and her family drank the water from their tap, unaware there was lead in it. Mays says she noticed a change in her three children. Convulsions, skin lesions, memory, and hair loss.
My heart breaks because the fact of the matter is I handed them the glasses of water.
Last month, Mays and other Flint residents filed a class action lawsuit. In court papers, they accused state and local officials of not properly monitoring or sampling the Flint River water and delaying in notifying the public of serious safety and health risks. They went on to call the city's deliberately false denials about the safety of the water deadly and arrogant.
They continually said the water is safe to drink.
The city's water problem started in the spring of 2014 when Flint moved its water supply from a source in Detroit to the Flint River. The switch was supposed to save the city about $15 million a year. But the lead levels detected in Flint's children under the age of 5 nearly doubled, according to a study by a local medical center.
93 of them.
In October, city officials declared unfiltered water unsafe to drink. Shortly after, Flint had to switch back to the original Detroit water supply.
Damage from lead is irreversible.
Flint's new mayor, Karen Weaver, says the city needs to fix its decaying infrastructure.
When we made that switch to the Flint water, we damaged the pipes. We already had very old infrastructure, but there was no corrosion control in place.
The World Health Organization declares any level of lead in the body unsafe and particularly toxic to young children. Severe cases of exposure may cause mental disabilities and behavioral difficulties with irreversible neurological effects.
Do you feel helpless in this situation?
I can make nightmares go away. I can make spiders go away. I can't fix this, and I can't make this go away.
Mayor Weaver says fixing the city's water system could cost $1 billion. She hopes declaring a state of emergency will unlock state and federal funding, but it's ultimately not her call. The cash-strapped state and the federal government have to approve her request. Gail?
All right. Thank you, Adriana.
Okay. So now that was a clip regarding discussing the elevated levels of lead in the blood of children. And the lead is in the water. It's now being found in the children, which is causing, which has caused and is causing severe brain damage. And this lead poisoning causes irreversible brain damage.
Yes, you can't go back.
Right.
Can't
and
fix
so
it.
In April, the water was switched from people in Flint receiving the water from Detroit. And this was done so that once the city, all these different city managers came in, this action was taken so that they could save like $2 million a month. Okay, so then they switched the water system to receiving water from the Flint River, which is contaminated with lead. And one lady even reported that when it froze over, they found two bodies in the Flint River. And also, two bodies. Now, and this is where the people were drinking their water and bathing. Water was laden with not only lead, but E. coli. So these people were cooking, bathing, hospitals using E. coli-laden water. The water was yellow, murky, smelly, brown, cloudy. People were suffering from hair loss, rashes, just a myriad of different ailments. And the children, some of the children were like A students, and then they all of a sudden began to become C students because of the cognitive delays that the lead in the water caused. So this is really serious. Flint, Michigan is under a state of emergency. The mayor, Karen Weaver, declared Flint in a state of emergency. So I want to send out my prayers to those people in Detroit. And I would like to see some groups just sending some water up there. We need to send some water to those people in Flint. I mean, it's one thing, they already went through the whole situation with the increase in the water bills, and now you give them lead water? This is crazy. It's crazy. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
No care. They have no care whatsoever, the people. It's all about the money.
None at all. So we're going to talk about that.
A former Oklahoma City police officer.
We'll also listen to this clip, speaking on the whole case, and I'll pause this intermittently so that we can have some discussion around what the clip is sharing with us.
Facing life in prison for the serial rapes of African American women. An all-white jury convicted Daniel Holtzclaw last week of rape and other crimes against 8 of the 13 women who accused him. All 13 victims testified during the trial, each with similar stories of rape, sexual assault, threats if they didn't comply with Holtzclaw's demands. Holtzclaw targeted them during traffic stops and interrogations, forcing them into sexual acts in his police car or in their homes. Prosecutors say Holtzclaw deliberately preyed on vulnerable Black women from low-income neighborhoods. They ranged in age from 17 to 57. Most of the women said they didn't go to the police because they didn't think they could get justice. One said, quote, "I didn't think anyone would believe me. I'm a Black female." But one woman did come forward to get the case rolling. It was Holtzclaw's oldest victim, 57-year-old Jani Ligons. At a news conference the day after the verdict, she spoke out.
All I can say is I was a victim. I was traumatized. I went to therapy. I had a stroke behind this, and I still live with this day after day. And all I know is I wasn't a criminal. I have no record. I didn't do anything wrong. You said I did something wrong. You said I was swerving, which I was not. You just wanted to stop me. So all I could say is I was innocent, and he just picked the wrong lady to stop that night.
Yes. That's Jani Ligons, a victim who reported Officer Daniel Holtzclaw to the police where he worked. The rapes happened between December 2013 and June 2014. Holtzclaw was reportedly under investigation by the Oklahoma City Police Sex Crimes Unit 6 weeks before his final crime. That means Holtzclaw assaulted half of the women he was convicted of attacking while under investigation. Holtzclaw broke down in tears as the verdicts were read last week, and prison officials say he's now on suicide watch. While Holtzclaw's conviction may bring his victims some relief, the case has raised questions about whether it's part of a wider problem of devaluing African-American lives, in this case, African-American women. Despite the charges and ultimate convictions of serial rape, the Holtzclaw prosecution got far less corporate media attention than any other criminal trials. And following a series of high-profile police killings and abuses of unarmed African-Americans, some have questioned whether Holtzclaw's crimes were enabled by a criminal justice system that dehumanizes African-Americans.
In a variation of the movement slogan, Black Lives Matter, some who attended the Holtzclaw trial have been saying Black women matter. We're joined now by three guests. Kimberly Crenshaw is with us, a law professor at UCLA and Columbia University and the founder of the African American Policy Forum. And in Oklahoma City, Candace Liger and Grace Franklin are the co-founders of OKC Artists for Justice, an Oklahoma City-based advocacy group founded around the case of Officer Daniel Holtzclaw. Let's go to Oklahoma City first. Candace, let's begin with you. Talk about this case. We're talking about rapes and sexual assaults that happened, 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago. The trial just took place. Why did you get involved? What do you think are the key issues here?
I think the key issues really revolve around the abuse of power. On the Northeast side, there are many different type of areas, socioeconomic-wise. And Holtzclaw specifically preyed on women in the lower-income, impoverished areas of the African-American community. So we as African-American women, familiar with the East Side, we wanted to make sure that we gave these women a voice, not only in the judicial system, but also show that there's a community that backs their claims, that believes these women. And I think that's really important, especially involving sexual assault cases where they were constantly under attack as far as their character, as far as their history, their past criminal records. So regardless of that, we wanted to show that we believe you.
Grace Franklin, you were particularly focused on, among other issues, the issue of bail. Explain how Holtzclaw got caught, how he went on for so long. We're just talking about a particular set of rapes and assaults. Who knows how many others he was involved with? How long was he an officer? This Guardian piece that says he was under investigation as he committed crime after crime.
Well, initially with the bail issue, the reason this case came to light was because of Ms. Liggins that you just heard from, the 57-year-old grandmother who reported. She was the first survivor to report. And then once he was arrested, the initial bail was set at $5 million. So that is a statement, and that is a way to keep a defendant in jail because he wasn't going to be able to come up with that type of money to get out. Another judge came in, Judge Timothy Henderson, the same judge who was over the proceedings for the trial, and reduced it to $500,000. When that occurred, what we knew was that was about the value of Black women. We believe there's no way if 13 white women, Asian women, Hispanic women, any other group of women, if it was 13 of them, there's no way it would go from $5 million to $500,000. The other issue with bail is that he was on a home monitoring system. He violated the home monitoring system because he went to a doctor's appointment without notification. He spent 14 days in jail and then was allowed to be back on a monitoring system at home. That's unheard of. You cannot violate home bail. You cannot violate a home monitoring system and be put back on it. That's unheard of. And then in the end, the way he was remanded to jail is that the bond company revoked his bail. And that's how he was back in prison or in jail, remanded in August of 2015. So those things that happened is a clear reflection of us that Black women aren't as valued. There's no way that it would go from $5 million to $500,000 that he would violate home monitoring systems and then still be out. We believe that that is a reflection of how Black women are viewed in this country and how in the justice system they are not valued.
I want to turn.
Okay, let's talk about that. The value of Black women. The sister stated that his bail was initially set at $5 million, and then it was reduced to $500,000. And this man raped these women while on duty, and then
while being investigated, So,
and then, you know, can I say something, Black Rose? Because I just thought about what a Black man just spent 28 years in prison because a woman said she dreamed. She dreamed this night that he raped her.
Dreamed that he
and
raped
the man,
her.
She dreamed. That's a news story. You can type it and pull it up. She dreamed
I
that
I actually have that.
Raped.
That was one of my good news topics that I did want to report, but kind of sort of good because he's now supposed to be released.
Yeah, he's free, but look, Claire. But listen at this. But looking at what I'm saying, look at this, how 13 Black women was raped. Now, they raped. And this man goes to jail. They picked this man up and didn't turn this man loose. And it was all, I don't know, was it a lie or in our head or what? Because when they did the DNA test, it wasn't true. But the man spent 28 years in prison because of dreams. Because the woman said she dreamed it. And the man kept telling them to do a DNA test. And they wouldn't do it. But here you go, got 13 Black women. And they was raped, and this man is out? Okay, come on. It speaks for itself now.
And his name was Clarence Moses L. 1989, he was sentenced to 48 years in prison after the woman said that she had a dream that he was a man that beat her in the dark. After she had been drinking at a party, and she was drinking with all these other guys that they refused or neglected to interview, but when she said that she had a dream that Clarence Moses L was the one that raped her, then they just went and convicted him right away. So, yeah, they threw out the rape kit and any possible evidence, bed sheets, anything like that. And so what happened is a man confessed just this past summer that he was the one that actually raped her. So now the
all those years.
Right, he spent 28 years in prison. I mean, you took away his life. You took away half his life, his prime years. So, but this Daniel Host, Claw, I'm just calling him the Claw. These women that suffer from his attacks, I have to go back to like what Brother Brown always says. Where is the Black army that's going to protect us, and in particular the Black women? Because without us, there can be no Black nation. And we need
that's
Black
right.
men, too. So, I mean,
right.
if you're raping and destroying these women like this. And another thing that bothers me about this case is, what about the other women? So what did you do? You just discredit them?
Right, exactly.
Discounted them. So the whole marginalization of Black women, not only are you marginalizing Black women in that way, but it's just the fact that it's like, well, because you were maybe a drug user, or maybe you were a lady of the night, so we just discredit your testimony. That's not right.
No,
that's
not right at all.
That's not fair. And so that makes it so difficult for some of these women to come out when they have been raped.
Exactly.
Because they're the ones that are victimized. And this system has been victimizing and sexualizing Black women for centuries. You can go back to Sarah Bartman, who was put in a circus and made out of a circus item because of her physique. And so they've always sexualized us and raped us and took from us and just ravaged our bodies as if we're nothing. And then to come back with what do you call it, alcohol swipe or salt swipe sword, and then you steal their children from them after you rape them.
Right.
I just can't even imagine going through what some of the women have gone through. Yes, Brother Brown.
Yeah, I was helping a guy with a case of that magnitude about 8 years ago in Virginia. His name was Wayne Maurice Scott. He came from Roanoke. So when Brother Scott, and I did a lot for inmates in the state of Virginia. So when he gave me his case, what I told him, I said that it was a reporter in Roanoke. had been reporting his story to the media. Now, he was charged with the rape and robbery of a white female. So when they did DNA test, he didn't fit the profile. The profile came back as that of a white male. So I got in touch with the reporter. Because when he had a public defender, he was supposed to go back to court. And it was a whole lot of, you know, he didn't know how to handle his situation. So anyway, the reporter wanted to report on the results to the media so that it could be brought to the attention of the Virginia Supreme Court. Well, I had the ball rolling. So in walks Barry Shack, the Innocence Project. This has been about 6 years ago. Barry Shack from the Innocence Project came in, and he comes in with this team of paralegal criminal justice students. And, you know, he ordered all Mr. Scott's stuff and told Mr. Scott to disassociate himself with me. Well, I told him, I said, I wish you well. I said, but you have to watch white folks. See, we have to stop believing that white people will save us. We have to. They are not geared to saving your black ass, excuse my friends. Okay? And I left it alone. So now here we are in 2015, about 6 years later. Mm-hmm. And Barry Shack to move on. And when I check the roles of the Virginia penal system, Wayne Scott is still incarcerated for the rest of his life. So, you know, and there was an incident in Norfolk where a white cop had been doing this. And as you say, black women, African women, never get the treatment that white women get. And I'm telling you, because my mother was raped when she was 7 years old, and she made the transition 10 years ago. She was never able to sleep with the light off in her bedroom. It traumatized her for the remainder of her life. And she shared a lot of things about that with me when I was a kid, when I was, you know, a young man. But here's one of the things that I do know. And this man that raped my mother got off. And this was like in 1935, 1936. The very next day they let him out. He raped a white woman, a white girl. He died in the penal system in Virginia. So there has always been a disrespect for our women when it comes to being sexually assaulted and made the victim. And so many times I continue to tell people that we as Africans in the Western Hemisphere, as well as the world over, are always criminalized as criminals. Regardless of our situation, regardless of who you are, and regardless of what you do, in the system of white supremacy and racism, you are always criminalized as a criminal. You are always labeled as a criminal. I don't care how much the victimization is. We are all victims. You don't have to commit a crime as an African person to be labeled as a criminal because you're already victimized as a criminal. And like I said, we have no male participation. You haven't heard anything. When the Nation of Islam, there were two members of the Nation in Chicago, and this thing happened up there about, I guess it was about 7 or 8 years ago. And the same thing about these prostitutes, or ladies of the evening, as they were called, and women who were on drugs. They had a serial rapist going around in Chicago. He was not only raping the black women, but he was murdering. So they had these two guys from the Nation allegedly charged with offenses. But when they were acquitted, nobody took up the banner to find out who killed these women.
Correct. Who killed the women.
Right. Now you have these so-called organizations with Negro leaders, which I don't classify any of them as leaders, and that includes Minister Farrakhan, that will not step up to the plate when it
right. Brother Brown, let me get back into playing some more of this clip because I still want to hear from Mother Hattie and Aja, too, on this topic.
I want to turn to Sharnay Hill, one of the women who pressed charges against Officer Daniel Holtzclaw. She recounted what happened after he arrested her and took her to a hospital where her clothes were taken away and she was handcuffed to the bed.
Me being in a room with the police, not expecting to get violated the way I did, the way I was done, I just couldn't even believe it. I was speechless. I was scared. I didn't, when everything was going down, I was scared. I didn't know what to do. I felt like I was in survival mode, so I had to do what he was making me do. So,
thank you.
That was Sharday Hill, one of Holtzclaw's victims. Speaking one day after the verdict was announced, lawyer Benjamin Crump, who represented five of the women against Officer Holtzclaw, called his clients Johnny Liggins and Sharday Hill heroes.
The biggest hero here, and I hold her hand up in victory because she's a survivor. She is a survivor. Sade is a survivor. This is a victorious time. And we're not celebrating just because what happened in court. We're celebrating their courage to come and tell the story for so many other women who never came forward after they suffered as victims of rape, of domestic violence, of abuse. Well, this is the face of courage when people dare to stand up and say we refuse to remain silent. So we applaud you all. We thank you all. America thanks you all.
That's attorney Benjamin Crump. Professor Kimberly Crenshaw, talk about your involvement with this case and talk about these women heroes who came forward.
Yeah. Well, Amy, this is precisely an example of the vulnerability that Black women face to various forms of police abuse. We wrote about this in a report called Say Her Name, including sexual abuse of police officers as one of the particular ways that Black women experience police abuse, but also one of the ways that police abuse is not included in the way we've been mobilizing around violence against Black bodies. So these are examples of what happens when police have the authority, unchecked discretion, the belief that whatever they're doing is generally legitimate. What happens is that those who are marginalized, both because of their race, their gender, where they live, their criminal background, all of these are the things that make these women more vulnerable because they're less likely to be believed. What happens to them doesn't matter. And quite frankly, as you mentioned earlier, the corporate media doesn't pay any attention to these issues at all. So if we were to think about, for example, what would have happened if a security guard or a campus police officer had raped 13 women on a college campus, or a coach had done the same thing, that courtroom would have been packed. We would have known everything about what happens to young women in college campuses. So we really have to ask ourselves, how could this have happened with so little attention to these cases?
The lawyer, Benjamin Crump, also raised this issue of where was the media surrounding this case?
I scratched my head up, I talked to Ted, and I said, what is it about these 13 women that is problematic or troubling? What is it about them? What is it? Why are they unworthy of national media attention in such a sensational situation as a serial rapist with a badge?
All right, we'll stop it right there. I do have to agree with Attorney Benjamin Crump on there. Where was the media on this? There wasn't a lot of outcry from the various groups. Let's take a break, and we will be right back, and we'll pick right back up on our topics. Listen to Global Play.
This is Brother Elliot, host of Time for an Awakening, and you're listening to Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennium.
All right, and we're back at the Lotus Place talking about the sexualization and victimization of Black females and the lead in the water in Flint, Michigan. Now, I know in New York, and Delta, you brought this topic back to us regarding the young boy. I think it was in New York, the young boy who was searched on the street by this female white officer. And she grabbed his genitals so hardly that she fractured one of his testicles, and he now possibly won't be able to have any children, because I think he had to have that testicle removed, I think. And so these officers, these cops, they go around and they sexually assault the men and the women. But I want to hear from you on the line. Have you ever felt that a cop would sexually assault you? Did you ever think that a cop would be like some serial rapist going around raping you? Vulnerable women, and do you feel vulnerable? Anybody can jump in.
I'll speak on that. I fortunately have never been put in that position, but it is based on my interactions with the police officers. I've never, committed a crime, anything like that, or been arrested or, in jail, anything like that. But just the typical day-to-day actions of the police officers, generally, not all of them, generally, I'm not shocked. I'm not really shocked, because they take their badge as an authority to do whatever they like. When I saw some guys that were just in their neighborhood, just out on the street talking as guys do, the police pulls up, nothing is going on wrong, but he makes those young men take their shirt off and pull their pants down and search them. What everybody could see. And then he made them lie down on the ground. Nothing was going on. That just shook me. That was like 15, 20 years ago. But this is like, and then when the guy later, he's like, oh, they do that all the time. I'm like, what? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is broad daylight.
Stop and frisk. I mean, they may, and to me, and I mentioned this the other day, to me, that's very similar to just an element of pedophilia laws. You just want to stop and feel on people.
Exactly.
You just want to stop and feel on other men, other women, or whatever. All of this touching and patting and all of this stuff. But you see, they create, once again, create all of this fear and, we just don't know. We have people transporting drugs or selling drugs and selling cigarettes. And
exactly.
And all of this stuff. So we got to
create the fear.
Create the fear. So now we have to pat everybody down and sexually assault people. Like Eric Gardner said.
And that's what he was complaining about. Don't touch me.
And they turned around and killed that man when he stood up for his rights and said he didn't want you sexually assaulting him anymore on the street. And
anymore.
Friends, neighbors, children, family, whoever. And they killed him. That was a snuff tape. That was just like watching one of the, is that what they call it? That snuff, where you watch people get killed?
And this is what these people do. They enjoy this type of thing. This is horrible. Disgusts me. That disgusts me. So I'm sorry, I went off on a tangent because I just think about how so many people, like Eric Gardner, they want to stand up for their rights. And Freddie Gray, I don't want you patting me down. I don't want you harassing me, arresting me for whatever. So let me break out and run. And then now you're dead.
Right. You know, when we think about the victimization of Black women, let's mm-hmm. go back to when the music industry did the flip mm-hmm. of mm-hmm. pushing songs that demean Black women. They have mm-hmm. these videos on TV for the whole wide world and international world to see, with the Black women half stripped, you know, throwing their booty up in the air, and the men walk by and pat them, and they throw money at their butts and stuff like that. So this is a setup to say to the American public, this is what they like. This is what mm-hmm. they're all about, all the Black women. You know, so subliminally, they're feeding to the public, oh, they don't matter. They don't, mm-hmm. they're sexual creatures anyway. So mm-hmm. now, with this thing happening with the women being raped, Black women being raped by the police officers, oh, it's not a big deal. Oh, it's mm-hmm. not a big deal.
They
you know?
Just
yes, they probably asked for it.
Mm-hmm. Let me read this piece. This is a transcript of Hypersexualization of Black Women by Najee Charles, the Jezebel. Derogatory stereotype of Black women, a hypersexual, seductive, and manipulative slave woman. Portrayal of Black women as innately promiscuous, seductive, alluring, worldly, beguiling, tempting, and lewd. Hypersexuality exhibiting unusual or excessive concern with or indulgence in sexual activity. History of the Jezebel, slavery. White Europeans locked into racial ethnocentrism, misinterpreted African polygamy, semi-nude attire, and tribal dances as hypersexual and lewd. Sexual victimization, rapeability. In a sample of 83% white and 17% Black college students, a hypothetical acquaintance rape scenario was less likely to be viewed as a crime and more likely to be viewed as all right if the victim was Black compared to white. Contradictions, misconceptions. The Jezebels were tragic mulattoes with thin lips, long straight hair, slender nose, thin figure, and fair complexion. Rape during slavery. The rape of Black women slaves was justified through racist and sexist ideology, claiming Blacks were intellectually inferior, culturally stunted, morally undeveloped, and animal-like in sexuality. There's more to that piece, but I think we'll have
very
to
deep.
Read more on that in part two, because we definitely need to have a part two of this. But let me ask this question. Let's see. Do you think that there is, this is a question from this transcript, do you think that there is a direct correlation between a female performer's success and how they express themselves sexually? That's a good
read
one
it
for
again.
Delta, because she's into the entertainment and news and whatnot. Do you think there is a direct correlation between a female performer's success and how they express themselves sexually? For example, Beyonce. Would we like Beyonce if she wasn't, you know, shaky, 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 and, you know, showing little flashes of her crotch here and there, but pretending to be this innocent church-going girl, but then she all on TV. I guess she goes into Sasha. She blames it on Sasha when she goes on stage and just breaks out into all of this, crawling on the floor. Or Nicki Minaj, or the white chick, Lady Gaga, she pulls out penises and all these kinds of weird costumes and things like that. Nicki Minaj has done that as well. And so, what do you think? Delta, are you still there? Icy Hot, Brother Brown, Zola. Somebody's freezing. I think it's Brother Brown. Bring your phone a little bit, Brother Brown.
Well, I mean, yeah, I'm listening to your question. I'm trying to see how that relates to the topic.
Okay, the topic is talking about sexualization and the victimization of black women.
Right.
So this was just a question, as I stated, that a part of this transcript that I'm reading from Najee Charles is talking about the hypersexualization of black women. So people view black women as sexual beings. So do women, like the performers, do you think that they have to play into that in order for them to feel successful? Do they feel that they have to continue to play into that? For instance, India Arie, her and Alicia Keys, they both came out at the same time. But who received all the Best New Artist Awards? Alicia Keys, light skin. Tragic Mulatto, what she just spoke about in this article. Light skin, little half breed, half white girl, has a white mother, black daddy. She was, you know, came out a little sexy like, versus Indy Irene, who came out with the head wraps, the long gown, speaking about social issues. Coming from a different perspective that people were commonly familiar with.
One of the things we have to realize is who controls the industry of music.
Well, we know that, Brother Brown, but I'm talking about now the question.
You're asking me, I'm trying to answer. The people that control the industry of music, they set the norm for what they tell these people what they're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
So they make the people that adhere to that, they're the ones that become successful.
Mm-hmm.
So if I tell you to get up there and shake your hand and take off your clothes, and that's how you're going to become rich, and that's what you do.
And that's what you do. So they do feel like they have to play into it.
Right. If they want to be successful.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. It was the same thing with this music back in the '80s, when this black lady, I can't remember her name, was talking about how these rappers were degrading black women in their music.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody came out against her saying that this was
part
of about
Cedar Lewis Tucker.
Right.
Cedar Lewis Tucker. Mm-hmm.
Right. And when she said that, nobody took her side.
Right, sure didn't, because I didn't either.
Right, see, but the bottom line was that we've been having music forever. We never degraded our women in our music, not to the point where we call them bitches, hoes, and sluts, and what we were going to do to them, and stuff like that, and it was acceptable, because the Jewish community that owned the music said that this is what we'll sell. So these guys bought into it. And to an amazing guy like Ice-T and what this other boy named Son just made a movie straight out of Compton. And these boys have went on to become multimillionaires in the movie industry.
Yeah.
Ice-Cube, yeah. See, when you dance to the music, you gotta pay to the piper.
Now let me ask you this, Brother Brown. What do you think about what's going on? Because we're gonna move into the second topic. These last few minutes. Oh, I need to read Delta's letter. She's still up. I don't know if she's still with us. But the Flint, Michigan.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
I was listening to that Brother Brown.
Oh, okay. All right then. Well, I want to hear Brother Brown's thoughts on the situation with Flint, Michigan. and their water being contaminated with lead, and it's causing all these irreversible problems with the children. And I think I read that 52% of like Detroit and Flint's residents are under 52% of the black population, I believe, are under the control of this emergency manager versus 2% of the white population. So this is affecting a lot of our people up in Flint. They already lost their industry. It's so much breathing, and I don't know what all of that is.
It sure is.
I cannot. I'm trying to be patient, but somebody's sounding like I don't know what, and it is irritating me, really. I mean, the snoring, the I don't know what it is, but please, come on, y'all. Come on. All right. So, Brother Brown, what do you think about this lead water in the Flint?
Well, it's called environmental racism.
Exactly.
And, right. Uh-huh. And the thing about it is that, you know, when you call the EPA, and I was working with some people one time, I think it was in Tennessee, and this was a case where I think it was involved in one of them big chemical companies. I don't know whether it was, I think it was DuPont. And I forget now because it's been a long time. And I had connected with this young lady through a chat line years ago.
Wait a minute, hold on, Brother Brown. I hate to interrupt you, but we only have like 15 minutes. I want to deal with the Flint situation.
I'm going to make it short. I was just relating it to that. Okay.
Brother Brown, you always take us to another story.
It's related to environmental racism.
Okay. And what you say? Okay, it's related to environment. Okay, that's your statement.
You know, I think if I can share a little bit.
Yeah.
I think goes a little bit even with that and all those other things that people talked about earlier tonight. Also, it just seems to me there's always this attack on stealing the land from African American people, black people, when it comes to that. And so if you do it by any means necessary, mm-hmm. whatever it means, you do it that way. This is nothing that, on a smaller scale, like the U.S., these cities, and there were 7 or 8 of them, I think, that was on a list to be slated. It's basically hostile corporate takeovers and oppression of people and just taking the land from them, taking whatever it is that they have. It's not just about water. It's a larger plan in the scheme of things to annihilate certain people in our country. And it is about black people. It is about, you know, just do whatever you want to do. While you save a lot of other people and you want to save immigrants, but yet the people that are here, you want to kill them off by whatever way you can.
That's a very
you want to save these, and then you want to kill off the people that, you know, are here. And it is always kind of, oftentimes it revolves around poverty. And the same with the rape of this these women that officers doing. He isn't the only one. He is probably not going to be the only one to get caught doing that. People just don't want to go through that because of how they even self-esteem and feeling about themselves even. Like, oh, it's just a little sex. Oh, hey, forget it. It's not that big of a deal. And so that's kind of what I wanted to say on that. And if I could say one more thing about this whole piece around black women and black women being looked at as this hyper-sexualized person. I don't know, it's kind of a double-edged sword. I think it's about women, period, But then black women is a devalued sort of thing, because white women also do all those things. They are constantly, my mother used to say, it was so funny, always got their clothes off somewhere in the middle of a commercial, you know. It's always sex, you know, sexuality sells, you know, naked women or women in bikinis sell. And white women are looked at, I think, as the same, in the same manner, in the sense of, I mean, they're done that same way. So like all those videos that those black girls are doing, the black women that, you know, with the scanty clothes and the people doing, you know, things, white women are looked at, white women have the same kind of thing. They're always, you know, they're perceived as strippers. I mean, it's a whole segment of them. But there is that, there's that racism around black women. That's okay. And it seems it has to be someone that gets oppressed even further. And then I'm going to just set up on this one. Then you look at the military. They're murdering and raping them in the military the same way. Same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lavina Johnson and so many others, men and women, being raped.
Three.
Mm-hmm. Thankfully,
so,
and then also in Michigan, Detroit, I mean, isn't it almost a predominantly black city? Because I heard during the election time, that city went Democratic. So y'all got to think that away too. That could be a way to get the blacks out of there, to get them out of that city, because they said that city is back up on the rise. It's coming back up financially wise, you know, doing with a lot of people are talking about coming back in there starting business. So you got to look at it both ways. That could be a way to get all the blacks up out of there. And they can be,
that's what I was saying, the plan. They're always after the land of the black people, with a lot of black people. Gentrification is all a part of it, always.
They have other plans for that land.
Yeah, anything near the water.
In the way.
Mm-hmm. Wherever the water is, you know, that's it, all over the world. Mm-hmm. All over the world. Just check out where they're at. Just look at your map.
Right.
Look at your map. It's an international thing, and it's near the water. It's always around the water. They want that water line, coastline, wherever it is.
Right, mm-hmm. Because people have been talking about certain companies like Nestle. CEO of Nestle wants to privatize water. Different people want to privatize and make it even more difficult for people to have access to water. And I think that's just crazy. Delta, we only have a few minutes. Let me read your question to you, Delta, while you're still up and with us. Okay. Ask Delta. Ding, 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 ding. Okay, Delta, she says, I am a divorced woman of middle age. My ex still has feelings for me, but for me, that is gone. We have a son together, and we are kind and considerate to each other. That's it. My friends and some family members have always said he could be your sugar daddy. He's crazy about you still, and he will give her money easily, and will give me money easily. Okay. She says, Delta, she has a hard time with that. I guess that's asking him for money or him giving her money. And let's see. He always has a lady friend, and she doesn't want a relationship with him, and she doesn't feel comfortable just having sex with him for money. Which, now Delta, she says she does need money. She's not trying to say she's not wanting to accept some money from a nice gentleman, but she just has an issue with like having sex with him because she knows that he'll be the one to be a sugar daddy. So she says she knows that this is okay for other women. It's not a problem for them. What would you do, Delta? What do you think that she should do? Because he is a respectable man, and he's very good to her son.
but the sexual feeling is just not there.
Okay, now this was her son's father, I think.
Yes.
That's what she said. Well, if the respect is not there, she said the respect is not there in that way. So why would you put yourself in that position? So that means if you sleep with him, that means you don't have no respect for your own self. So that tells me it's about a dollar bill. So if you sleep with him in order to get the dollar bill, that means you don't care. You don't have no respect for yourself. All you worrying about is a dollar bill. There are other ways that you can get money, is take care of yourself. You do not have to have a man all the time in order to get money from. And see, this is what a lot of women go wrong. Why would you sleep with someone just for money? Okay, then their problems come with that. But you're not, if he started giving you money and sleeping with you, he's going to say he owns you. So why put yourself in that predicament? You won't be able to walk away because he's gonna have total control of you, and he's gonna have total control of you with his money. Why put someone don't have no respect? If you don't have no respect for him, why take his money?
Well, she didn't say she didn't have any respect for him. Yeah, she didn't say she didn't have any respect. She has, she does respect him, but she said, let's see.
Well, he don't respect her because he already has a woman, so he's not going to get rid of this woman because she said in that a woman is always around. So
that's true. But isn't that for the young girls? That the young girls you need to make sure he can take care of you, make sure the man is reputable, and so I'm getting confused.
Okay, she said it's a middle-aged woman, so she's not a young girl. The man is respectable, you know, in the community, she said. Mother Dunn has a point. If he's asking her to sleep with him and then he has a woman, that's not respectable. Yeah, he's not respecting her.
That is correct. Yeah. He has a perception, but for, he has a lack of perception and a pretending just for the people. But he's something else behind closed doors.
Let me ask you this. How many men do y'all know is only sleeping with one woman, though? Generally, what they do is, and some women, too.
But a decent woman ain't going to do that if she knows that he's got two or three women. I know I wouldn't.
Some women do, though, Mother Dunn, and some women will sleep with a man. They may not know that he has two or three different women, but deep down inside, they know they're not the only one that he's sleeping with. Come on now, how many men y'all been with that's only sleeping with you? Well, they may tell you they only sleeping with you, but are they really?
Right, right.
Who really, but listen, really
they
knows?
May tell you. So, they may.
I would rather. Mm-hmm.
What I'm saying is, I wouldn't sleep with nobody when I know that he got someone else. That don't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
If you cannot be true to me while we dating, you're not gonna be true to me when we marry. That's just not gonna happen.
Well, he is being true. He's telling her that he does have a woman though, so he's not trying to hide the fact that he has another woman. So, and also, let me ask you this, just to throw this in here: what if he said, "Well, if you will be with me, then I won't be with that woman because I really want you." Because he really loves her, but he can't just sit around and just not be with anybody. So, but what if he tells the woman, well, you know, me and you, we've been married before. If you tell me that you want to be with me right now today, I'll leave everybody alone.
But she said herself it's not going to be because she don't want him. She said there's no feelings there. She just wants the money.
Okay.
That's what she's saying. So if she sleep with him to get the money, that means whatever it takes for me to get my bill paid and keep me in a certain lifestyle, this is what I'm going to do.
Isn't that what you've been saying before?
I have to say, Mother Hattie, didn't she say that though? That's what she's been telling us.
Should be secured, and a man should, you know, they should look for men that would take care of them in that manner, certain life standard. But
she said that she. But she said herself that there's no feelings there. She would never have those feelings for him. So what she needed to be.
I got the impression that it wasn't about security.
She needs to be a paid booty call. That's all she needs to be.
I think what Mother Hattie is saying, and me too, is that I thought that you were saying that we, number one, should look for the security. And then you can grow to love and like somebody.
Maybe she doesn't
have the feelings with him right now, but maybe after he starts taking her on some trips, buying her furs, paying the bills, alleviating some worries, maybe she will.
This is a different situation because she already been down that road with him. She has a son with him. And she said that she'd been down that road with him because she has a son. She said that there's no business there. It's just not there anymore. And she's saying it's not going to be. So if you want the money, just become a paid booty call.
Oh, I think we need to pick back up on this little letter because I still have some more questions too. But thank you, Dale.
I don't think I want to be a paid booty call.
That's basically what she's saying. She's saying there's no feelings there, and it never will be. She's not going back down that road, but she needs the money. So okay, and she said that he got a woman. Well, okay, well let's get an understanding. I'm a paid booty call. When you need me, I'm gonna be there. You know what my fee is? Just pick up the phone and call me.
Mm. Oh no, that's too much like a call girl right there. Oh my goodness.
But what she's saying.
But Delta broke it down. She broke it down.
Listen at the letter. I'm giving you what the letter said. This is her
Okay. I want to read it again. and can we pick back up? Can we have a part two on your letter with the part two of the show, Delta?
We sure can.
All right.
Yes.
Okay. So
that's good discussion there.
It is, because I still have some more questions with that. Thank you so much, Delta, for sharing that insight, because that's what y'all do.
Yes, thank you, Delta.
Uplift and help everybody with their relationships. And thank you, Mother Hattie, Brother Brown, Mother Zola. We went over a little bit. I did want Brother Brown to give us some going out with the ancestors. So we'll have to remember to do that the next time. Love you all. Thank you so much. And thank you, listeners and callers. And we'll be back on Wednesday night.
Namaste.